10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You have been listening to Radio Law Talk. The following is a live copyrighted presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for RadioLawTalk.com with your host, Frederick Penny, attorney at law. And now, RadioLawTalk.com.
Welcome to hour number two of Radio Law Talk. Well, you know, we went into the break. We were talking about the O.J. Simpson case, and you know, burden of proof and beyond reasonable doubt, and I don't know, the last 6 minutes or so, 6-7 minutes, it's just gotten my blood boiling, blood going about burden of proof and standard of evidence and what juries hear and how juries interpret the evidence. I don't know, maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit.
I was getting all excited about collection and trying to collect and enforce a civil judgment.
I know. We'll get to both of those because we'll kind of come back to that, because both of those are like the collection part. And this whole thing started when we talked about that stupid trivia question that I asked about who actually went to jail, and then that led to a question about O.J. Simpson and the civil suit and how they end up collecting funds. But yeah. That's fun stuff. We'll get to that in a second, Cal.
And then a caller called and said, remember, when he put the glove on, he had a glove on his hand to protect the glove. So he had a rubber glove, a little like a doctor's glove. And then here comes the glove, this wrinkled, shriveled, shrunken glove from blood and moisture. So it was a doomed, stupid idea on the part of Darden.
It was. If he was going to do that, you know, I guess the
get a brand new glove that's the same type and size,
exactly,
and say, put this on.
Although, look, okay, so here's my problem with that. All right, I wear a size, now if they got the same brand and same everything in size, but I wear a size 11 and a half shoe. My pant size is, generally speaking, in the waist.
Whatever it is.
I can't believe I'm going to admit this. Somewhere between a 36 and 38. But it all depends on the brand that I'm wearing, because in some shoes, I mean, like my foot ain't growing and shrinking at this point. Sometimes I have to buy a 12, sometimes I have to buy an 11. Just depends on how the manufacturer interprets what sizes are. Same thing with pants. You know, my waist isn't expanding or reducing in the same session that I'm fitting clothes, and yet sometimes I'll put on a 36 and it feels a little loose. I'll put on a 38 and it feels a little tight. It's weird. So, you know.
Men's clothes rules, the more expensive the brand, the more generous the fit.
Yes, yes. Men's clothes rule. Rules. I don't shop. For me, it's okay, I'm cold. I go inside, buy a coat, go outside. I'm not cold anymore. Let's keep going.
But I mean, at a real old school men's shop, like the old Grodin's or a place like that, you know, where if you bought expensive pants, you wore a 36. If you bought cheap ones, it was a 32.
You mean back in the day when they had stores that actually had salespeople that knew how to sell you something, as opposed to order takers that just would help ring you up whatever you could eyeball
and
on
how
the
to
rack?
Fit you. And how to fit you.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Exactly. I walked, it was about 20 years ago, but anecdotal, but I walked into a store. All I needed to do was buy a dress shirt, okay? And it wasn't very busy, and the salesperson was there. And my mom used to tell me about this because my grandfather, her dad, was a clothing salesman that went from one store to another, kind of changed employment, but his clients would follow him wherever. Because this was what it was. I walked in, said, I just need a shirt. And the guy's like, yeah, thanks for telling me what you need. Essentially, in his mind, it was, I'll tell you what you need. And he pulled out a suit jacket, a shirt, And then a couple of different shirts and a couple of different ties. And he goes, and he said, with this combination, you've got like 16 different outfits depending on how you mix and match. What do you do? I walked out of there with a suit, three shirts, and four ties. You know?
Is that like, Men's Warehouse?
Yeah. It was. It was a Men's Warehouse.
Yes, I know that style.
It was the one in downtown. It used to be in downtown Sacramento over on K Street next to where the Golden One Center now is. Yeah. And I was just like, how did this happen, and why am I $2,000 poorer?
And yet he was right.
He was. One of those suits I still have. It doesn't fit, but I still have it.
Can't get rid of a suit like that.
No. It's because I keep telling myself, someday I'll be able to fit back into this. And my body is going, in your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Not without a bunch of liposuction. But anyway, yeah, I do want to get back to the reasonable, and I want to get back to the debt collection thing, but we have case or no case. Cal, maybe you can send us through the scenario. We got enough time to do the scenario and let Denise and I think about how you've lied to us?
I think I can give you the setup right here. We can give the
now
answer after.
Now it's time to play case or no case.
Yay!
And now for the love of the game. A football referee, Roger Corsair, has been abused all year long. He was a good official in the top 10 of his association's King George, Louisiana Parish, but he got new glasses this year and never heard the end of it. You know, all the seeing eye dog jokes, you name it. Corsair had been on the committee negotiating fees for officials, and he realized that unless they got $100 a game plus travel, he would lose about half of his referees. And then it happened. The 2021 finals between the Connor and the and Fork River High School, Louisiana. The Connor coach had been verbally abusive throughout the game, and then finally, after one motion call went against his team, Coach Zig Pratt came barreling out, bumped into the referee, and said, "You blind old fool, you're going to cost me the championship and the game." Corsair reached into his pocket, took his $85 check, tore it up in front of the coach, called his crew, and said, "Come on, boys, let's go home. Let them finish the championship game without us," which by the rule they cannot do. So Coach Pratt was incredulous. Corsair said to him, "You'll never win your championship, will you, coach?" Connor forfeit sportsmanship. It was Pruitt's last game. Pratt had already announced his retirement. So the canceled game, and he went to his coaches' association and said, "We have to finish this game." And this coach ruined me, cost me my reputation, my job as a history teacher, and 1 year's retirement pay. So I want to know if I have a case against the referee for walking off the field because I was allegedly verbally abusive. Todd, you get the first shot.
Okay, pronoun usage. I've got to ask a couple of clarifying questions.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I read it in a hurry. I apologize.
So the coach, upset at a call, goes out, confronts this referee.
Correct.
Okay, and the coach, did he make contact with the referee?
Bumped into the referee. Correct.
So yes. Bumps into the referee.
Yep.
And then the referee says, pulls out the $85, says, "Okay, I'm tearing up my check for this.
I'm done. Yeah.
I'm done.
Thank you."
And he pulls it. Now, who declares forfeit?
The referee.
The referee.
So the referee declares that the bumping coach's team has forfeited the game.
Correct.
Okay. All right. You know, this is interesting. We've got we're coming up on the break here. Here's what I got to think about over the break.
Yeah, you have about a minute and 15 seconds to ruminate before we break, so go ahead.
The negative effect on the coach's job, you know, cost him as his history teacher and his position and the team and all of that, that was actually in my opinion, a done deal the minute he made contact with the referee. Because you can't touch a referee, and if he bumped him and did that, that's assault, and we've seen people be prosecuted for that. So I got to think about that, because I think everything afterwards, I mean, I guess I would say, I'm leaning towards, if this is a case, it's a case, but not for the reasons that you have proposed it. It's a case probably because the coach may have gotten in trouble because of the contact he made with the referee. Whether the referee sued him civilly or not, I mean, that's a criminal act. It's assault. So I got to think about that, and I'll give you the answer when we get back from the break.
And Denise, you can think about it too, and those of you listening, you may do the same likewise, as Radio Law Talk will continue with the answer to this case or no case after this.
Commercials and other announcements aired on Radio Law Talk contain the opinions of the sponsor. The airing of said announcements on Radio Law Talk does not constitute an endorsement. The announcements may contain claims that are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease. These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
I've got to get my car washed. This dirt, it just won't do.
The best thing about Quick Cut Car Wash is whenever you go through, the smell in your car is always great, and they have super fun lights and colors.
But I don't have no time today. I don't know what I do.
Your car smells good and it's clean at Quick Quack Car Wash.
And I know this place right down the road.
Quick Quack Car Wash.
Quick Quack Car Wash.
Get the Quick Quack confidence.
Hop inside, let's take a ride and watch this cat and shine.
Get the Quick Quack habit. Take a car once a week.
Just come and see, I guarantee your ride will steal the show.
I like Quick Quack because of the mascot, Quackles.
Come on, Quick Quack Car Wash.
So we sell unlimited membership for per vehicle. You can add a family plan and add an additional vehicle at a discounted rate.
Don't drive that dirty car. Quick Quack Car Wash. They'll have you looking sharp. Well, come on.
How would you like to go on a five-star vacation for just $99? We're talking about the quality of a Westgate Resort for $99. Not for one night, but for three fantastic nights at one of their luxurious destinations across the United States. And you'll even get a free $100 Visa gift card just for making a reservation. We've got some of the choicest destinations that you'll love in the United States that you can choose from for just $99 for a three-night stay. Take your family, take a special loved one, but get away. Go on vacation with Westgate Resorts. Call now to make a reservation for just $99, and you get a free $100 Visa gift card. Call Westgate right now and book your vacation. Here's the number.
800-283-6730. 800-283-6730. 800-283-6730. That's 800-283-6730.
Do you want to know the secret to putting extra money back in your pocket? Then switch your car insurance. And now you can make one phone call and shop dozens of insurance companies. Just like buying airline tickets, where it's easy to make one call that has all the best deals. We have great deals with most of the major top-rated insurance companies. We are your superstore for car insurance. We've switched people from their expensive car insurance plans and saved them hundreds of dollars a year. If you think you're paying too much for your car insurance, call now. It's easy to switch, and in 5 minutes, yes, just 5 minutes, you'll learn how much money you can save on your car insurance. Save yourself some money this year. Call now for your car insurance. Call eInsurance now for your free car insurance quote. 800-251-0427. 800-251-0427. 800-251-0427. That's 800-251-0427.
Do you run a business and want to learn how you can get between $10,000 to $5 million in 60 seconds? We're Biz2Credit, a top-rated online financing provider to hundreds of thousands of America's business owners. If your business does at least $120,000 a year in gross sales, we can get you more money to run your business in as little as 72 hours. Our terms are simple, repayment plans are flexible, and based on your cash flow. Plus, the paperwork is minimal and the approval process is fast. So in the time you've listened to this commercial, you could have learned if you qualify to get up to $5 million in cash deposited to your business bank account in the next 2 to 3 days. Funding specialists are ready to take your call right now and get you the money you need, fast. Call 800-559-5523. That's 800-559-5523. Again, 800-559-5523. Call now.
Are you people out of your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Stop whining.
Now it's time for more Radio Law Talk.
All right, so when we went into the break, the Radio Law Talk conundrum, was it a lie, was it not a lie, is it a case, is it a no case, was essentially a high school football coach gets into it with a ref because he thinks the ref's made a poor call, bumps the high school, the coach bumps the ref. The ref says, all right, that's it, we're done. Ref declares that the team of the football coach has forfeited the game, and now the question from Cal is, does the coach have a claim, have a lawsuit, does he have a case against the referee for the ref exercising the discretion to forfeit the game?
Yeah.
All right, so my crack legal analysis, and depending on what you hear, some people may think it was a legal analysis made because it was based on crack. But whatever. My analysis is this. Coaches can't touch refs during the game, and if a coach does touch a ref, especially bumps him, the ref is the one in charge of the head umpire, the head referee is the one in charge of the conduct of the game and can declare a forfeit based upon the conduct of the coach. So the ref operated within the rules and according to the authority that was granted to the referee. So there is, and there's nothing that the high school coach could do about that. And I don't think the high school coach could bring any credible lawsuit against the referee because he assaulted him when he pushed him. And the high school coach agreed to participate in the game knowing what the authority of the ref was to declare a forfeit. And really any harm to the reputation for the coach was because of his actions that were clearly viewable by both teams, the refs, and any fans that were in the stands. I might imagine a championship game, there were a lot. So the technical question I have is, if it's a case, it's only a case because the coach would have maybe been prosecuted. But is that beyond the purview of the scenario you have established, Cal?
That's up to you.
Oh, great.
It's case or no case.
There's no case for the coach against the referee.
Okay.
Coach may have a case, but no case for the coach against the referee.
Ms. Dirks, your thoughts on this particular incident?
Well, I think what you were trying to get at by the referee tearing up his check is that he quit his job and no longer had authority to... to call the game, you know? And I think that this is one of those situations where it's Cal, you know, making up all the little facts in the case so that we try to get confused.
Ouch, Todd, ouch.
And I'm going to say that it's no case.
By the way, by rule, a referee's authority or umpire or extends until he walks off the field. FYI, just so you know that. So here's the bottom line for this thing I just told you. It is a scenario based on a baseball game where this actually happened, where an umpire, a coach came out and just was ragging him on his strike zone all day long. The umpire said, hey, you know what? This isn't worth what I don't get paid. Here's my check. I'm done with this game. You're done. Your team is done. Have a nice rest of the season. You know, that was it. So this was just based on a baseball game that I saw that I thought was interesting. So it is something I made up, and that's case or no case.
Should have known when you had details about the names of the teams. That Cal, look, if you made this up based upon a baseball game that you saw and then came up with the names of high school teams, you really went to work on this.
I did. I actually researched what St. George Parish in Louisiana and name of the schools. I did all that. Of course I did.
But look, you know, baseball referees, though, baseball umpires, they're...
I did that for 15 years, by the way.
You know what? That's just absolutely a thankless job.
It is.
I mean, I had a soccer game because I was a soccer coach. I was only the, you know, second coach or whatever, co-coach or whatever you call it.
Assistant,
and they,
as it were.
Yeah, and the head coach walked off because the family members were yelling at him and saying, you're not playing my child enough. Yeah. And so then I, by nature, had to step up on the plate. So I called the hard shots because you're supposed to let everybody play, you know. And so one of the referees had to come and save me from family members. I mean, it was, I quit that I didn't quit it. I saw it all the way through, but I went to a different town after that because it was just too ridiculous.
The best you can do as a referee is have half of the people appreciate what you're doing, because the other side of the call, they're not going to like it. They're going to pick you apart no matter what happens. Yeah. And then if you're a coach, my standard phrase was, as an umpire, was every coach is an umpire, every parent is a coach, every parent is also an umpire. So you're at the bottom of the pecking order there.
But know? Sometimes umpires can get have thin skin. Oh,
they deserve it. They deserve it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I yeah.
Sometimes.
So I do always. I do baseball play-by-play.
Yeah.
And we had we had an ophthalmologist was sponsoring one of our games.
Oh, terrible. Okay. Oh, no, that's the worst.
They were like a season sponsor. So it was, and they sponsored the umpire. So it was this, and every game at the beginning of the game, and tonight's umpires are sponsored by the so-and-so optical. For your needs, go see this. Well, one umpire, first time he'd ever been there, got offended and threatened to kick the PA and the sound guy out because of that, and thought that we were poking fun at them. I saw another one where a PA guy got kicked out, or the umpire tried to kick him out of the game because after a bad call, the sound guy started playing Three Blind Mice.
Yeah. Most good umpires have a sense of humor.
They do.
But that's just a coping mechanism, because no matter what, it's not an easy job.
Did you see this last week the high school basketball game in New Jersey? Camden was playing against somebody. The final shot goes up, and it's a game winner, but then the refs get together and they wave it off, so the team lost. But video of it shows that ball was out of the kid's hand, 6/10 of a second left on the clock, and it went in. It should have counted, and one school district, I believe, has now filed a lawsuit to get the results overturned.
Some league rules allow replay, others do not.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just a matter of rule at that point.
But it was called right, and then another ref overturned it. Uh-oh. That's the problem they've got. Uh-oh. We'll be back after this. More Radio Law Talk. Don't go away.
Stay tuned. Much more coming up right here.
Commercials and other announcements aired on Radio Law Talk contain the opinions of the sponsor. The airing of said announcements on Radio Law Talk does not constitute an endorsement. The announcements may contain claims that are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease.
These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Keep listening for an exciting offer from U.S. Med. If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain and inconvenience of pricking your fingers over and over again. By wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers right away. If you're testing your blood sugar 4 or more times per day, injecting insulin 3 or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call today and learn about the latest CGM technology. 800-251-7560. 800-251-7560. We'll tell you all you need to know about CGMs. A CGM can immediately reduce pain. It's accurate, easy to use, and helps you make better diabetes treatment decisions. And with insurance, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Call now to learn more. 800-251-7560. 800-251-7560. Plus, get free shipping, and we'll bill your insurance company for you. CGMs are the newest in diabetic technology. They can help you stay in range and manage your diabetes better. Call now to receive your new continuous glucose monitor at little or no out-of-pocket cost, and delivery is free. Remember, if you're testing your blood sugar 4 or more times per day, injecting insulin 3 or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call today and learn about the latest CGM technology. Call 800-251-7560. 800-251-7560. 800-251-7560. Copays and deductibles may apply. 800-251-7560. That's 800-251-7560. Sponsored by U.S. Medical Supply.
Do you have an old car sitting around your house? Maybe you're even paying insurance on it. Well, if you don't need that car anymore, donate it, running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation. They will even come and pick it up for free and give you a receipt for a tax donation. breast cancer screening could save the life of someone you love. And right now, they need your help. They want to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And that's what your old car helps to pay for. So get your phone out and call right now to donate your car to the United Breast Cancer Foundation. Remember, they will come pick it up for free and give you a tax donation receipt. Call right now at 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473. That's 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-481-5621. 800-481-5621. 800-481-5621. That's 800-481-5621. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-493-6112. 800-493-6112. 800-493-6112. That's 800-493-6112.
Things have gotten out of hand with our friend again.
Sit down, shut up, and listen.
I like the Amargosa Valley.
Now, Radio Law Talk continues. Here's your host, Fred Penny.
So earlier, last hour, when we were talking about O.J. Simpson, we went to break, and I'm trying to follow how the conversation with Denise went to get from the fact that he was that he ended up serving prison time for the manner in which he got his tried to get his sports memorabilia back to the topic that we're going to discuss here, which is debt collection. But it went from okay. So the manner in which he went to get it back, some people had some of his memorabilia, and then Denise, you had mentioned that somehow you had heard that O.J. Simpson might be using the memorabilia as a way to get out of or to circumvent having to pay back or somehow the money judgment that the Goldman and Brown families had against O.J. because of his loss in the wrongful death case, which is in the millions, which led to pensions, which led to how they can get that, which led to the idea of how does somebody collect a money judgment if they've been awarded? You sue somebody and the court says, okay, you know, you're awarded $50,000, $5,000 for small claims. You're awarded an amount, and now you've got this amount. How do you collect it?
Right. Well, it's a little different than debt collection. It's more of an enforcement of judgment issue. And in the O.J. Simpson case, it was my understanding that he had given his memorabilia to a collector, if you will, to hold for him so that it would not be taken and auctioned off to help satisfy the debt that the Browns and the Simpsons, Browns and the
Goldmans
had against him, that civil judgment. And so what he did was when he couldn't get that back and when the collector was going to auction it off, he and some other people went in with guns and physically took the memorabilia.
But by the way, we're not suggesting that this is the legal way to collect on a debt.
No.
But this is what he did.
It wasn't even a debt for his case. He was just claiming the right to have the memorabilia. But he did transfer it to them to try to avoid the judgment. So what happens is when you have a judgment, there are certain assets you can go after, and there are certain assets that you cannot go after. You can go after income, so you can go out and garnish somebody's wages. You can go after, in many states, you can go after somebody's home, and you file and record an abstract against that property, and then you levy and have it sold, and you collect money. But where O.J. Simpson had his house, he was in Florida. In Florida, it's a debtor's haven. You cannot sell somebody's home to enforce a judgment.
Now,
you just cannot.
Now, really quickly, a lot of people don't know this, but within the same night, within hours of O.J. Simpson being found not guilty by the jury in the criminal case, I mean, he knew a civil case was coming. His lawyers knew a civil case was coming. And within hours of the verdict for the criminal case, one of his lawyers, I believe it was F. Lee Bailey, on a plane to Florida to find a house for O.J. Simpson to buy, because Florida is a homestead state where you can't go after somebody's home to satisfy a monetary judgment against them.
Right. And in addition, a lot of retirements are judgment-proof. What does that mean? That means that once that you can't go after and garnish a judgment, take your judgment and garnish retirement income. And NFL is exactly that. They cannot be garnished. So what do you do? How do you avoid this judgment?
Because what happens if they can't go after the Simpsons, can't go to the NFL's the pension fund and say, oh, by the way, we've got X amount of dollars against O.J. Simpson's, and he's got this in his retirement fund, so just go ahead and give it to us. They can't do that. But what about after O.J. gets a payment on his pension?
That's the part that you have to be clever on, because once he receives that payment and he places it into a banking institution, then it can be levied against, and you can collect that money. Now, what I think that O.J. Simpson has done, this is just my personal opinion, is I think he's probably living on his HELOC, on a home equity line of credit. And he's got like a home equity line of credit against his house. And so he takes his money from his retirement and he pays it on his house, what he's owing on his house, and then he lives off the home line equity. That would be a perfect way to avoid ever having to pay anything on this judgment. One of the things that's interesting, too, is in a lot of states, like you said, there's a homestead, so your home is protected up to a certain value, or retirement income is not, you can't garnish it, or 401k income, you can't go in a garnishment. There is exception in California.
And what's
you know
that?
What? You know what? You don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is. What?
Child support.
Oh.
Child support, you can actually go against retirements to collect child support in California. And I was one of the ones that got it done first without there being specific state statute that allowed it. But federally, it was allowed. And that was really a fun case. We made 60 minutes on that case.
You made 60 minutes?
Yeah.
Did you make $60? That's what I want to know. I'm kidding.
Probably it was about $65,000, which was a lot back then. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was called in the newspapers, I was called a bulldog.
I don't doubt that. I do not doubt that. So that is debt collection. If you have a money judgment, I think that you can go to. Sometimes if you take the judgment that you get from the court for the monetary amount, and then you can take that, and I believe that you can file sometimes with local sheriff's departments. And the sheriff's department, I know L.A. County has one, where the sheriff will then seek to enforce that to procure those funds. They have the mechanism for it. And that's how the bank accounts get levied and
investment accounts,
yes,
or wage garnishments.
And there's there's a bunch of different things they can do. They can technically go in and take property to auction off to satisfy judgment amounts. And so there's things that they can do.
One of the fun things in a particular case I had was that I found the Corvette in the garage. And when somebody has more than one vehicle, then that extra vehicle is not necessarily protected. There's not really a protection in California for that extra vehicle. And once I found the Corvette in the garage, that's how I got paid on another case, which was really cool.
Oh, my gosh. What year was the Corvette?
I think it was a 72. That stands out in my mind.
That's the Stingray model, like in the heyday of, I love Corvettes. Yeah. Although I've never ridden in one. I love them. All right.
Well, my uncle had a Corvette, a red and white one, a really cool one with one of those tops that goes back. And he used to hide his smut magazines underneath the seat. And me and my sister used to go in and look at the smut magazines.
You know, if anybody,
I love you, Uncle Bruce.
If anybody wants to really, you know, paint a picture of Denise's life, just go back and listen to the Radio Law Talks. Every couple of episodes, she'll drop some tidbit about her childhood. You could really assemble, you know, the. I got into Corvettes. I loved Star Wars. It's going to sound weird. I loved Star Wars. Huge Mark Hamill fan. And I think it was after Star Wars, but before The Empire Strikes Back, a little-known movie came out called Corvette Summer, where Mark Hamill played a high school student, and in his high school auto shop class, they took a Corvette, and it was that same series, the Stingray series, and they restored it. Well, they souped it up. They took it from nothing and made it really good. They put the steering wheel on the right side, so it was like for European driving, just to be flashy and stuff like that. And then I think a very young Annie Potts was in the show, and it took place in Southern California. The car gets stolen. And then ends up in some show in Las Vegas, and it's all about how he tries to go get his Corvette back. And, good show. And I've loved Corvettes ever since. Ever since. Go figure. Welcome to Radio Corvette Talk. All right. But when he went to Vegas to get it back, here we'll tie this all back in, he did not use any illegal means to try to procure his vehicle like O.J. Simpson did. So he didn't get a chance to spend time. A lot of people think that O.J. Simpson actually got sentenced to prison in that case. This is all speculation, but some people feel that it was a pretty heavy prison term that he was sentenced to, and that might have been some judge's way, you know, Nevada judge's way of making up for what they perceived as a wrongful acquittal in the criminal case before, whatever. It is.
I think it's because of the use of the guns.
Look, you use a gun. I don't care if you were entitled to the property. The manner in which you went about getting it back, no good. No bueno. All right, we'll be back after this with more Radio Law Talk. Don't go away.
Remember, Radio Law Talk is available 9 to noon Pacific every Saturday. Live on RadioLawTalk.com.
All advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
Here's Fred Penny with Penny and Associates.
When you or a family member have been injured in an accident, what should you look for in a personal injury lawyer? The first thing is an experienced personal injury law firm that is actually taking cases to trial. Hi, I'm Frederick Penny, managing partner and founder of Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers. For over 30 years, Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers has been successfully representing individuals and their families. At Penny & Associates, we're experienced trial lawyers, and we work with you to get the best results.
Go to PennyAndAssociates.com or call 800-616-4529.
If you're one of those independent people who wants your own business and you love food service, we just might have a great opportunity for you. Iceberg Drive-Ins. Iceberg is famous for its thick shakes and delicious food. We lend you our supply chain and expertise, and you can potentially have a thriving, successful, fun business that your customers will love. Iceberg Drive-Ins has some prime areas available right now, so if you're interested, get in touch with us right away. Go to icebergdrivein.com and click on the Contact Us button. Iceberg Drive-In, ready to grow with you.
This is Denise Dirks. We can represent clients in divorce, legal separation, child and spousal support, custody, termination of parental rights, step-parent adoptions, guardianships, and even conservatorship matters. Call 1-877-886-7186 for a consultation.
The law offices of Denise L. Dirks provide family law services in Northern California. When the law affects your family, call 877-886-7186. The family of attorneys at Denise L. Dirks is here to help.
I've got to get my car washed. This dirt, it just won't do. But I don't have no time today. I don't know what I do.
Man, I know this place right down the road. Quick Quack Car Wash. Hop inside, let's take a ride and watch this cat and shine. Just come and see, I guarantee your ride will steal the show. Come on, Quick Quack Car Wash. Don't drive that dirty car. Quick Quack Car Wash. They'll have you looking sharp.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan or just not happy with what you're paying for? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate or at little or no cost to you? Your life needs are always changing, but have you done anything to improve your health insurance for you and your family? Health insurance laws and coverage are always changing and getting better. It's impossible to do all the research yourself, but now it's all done for you for free. So regardless of your age or medical condition, take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
Paid for by Cheaper Health Insurance. 800-635-7188. 800-635-7188. 800-635-7188. That's 800-635-7188.
Interest rates and inflation are out of control. Is your credit card debt also out of control? It's time to resolve your debt and take back control for a lot less than what you owe. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, then you need to call us right now. Debt Fix Pros can significantly reduce the amount you owe, and you could be debt-free faster than you think.
I knew we had to do something. Our debt was growing.
It was getting out of control, and we just didn't know what to do.
We saw an ad for Debt Fix Pros. We called, and they showed us how fast they could get us out of debt.
It really was amazing, and now we're back in control.
Call now, and we'll show you how easy it is to fix your debt. The call and consultation are free. Call Debt Fix Pros right now at 800-580-7703, 800-580-7703, 800-580-7703.
You look fabulous! You're gonna knock them dead at the bowling alley!
I'm gonna say it. I'm going to say it. I'm gonna say it.
You're listening to RadioLawTalk.com. And now back to your host, Frederick Penny.
So in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the if you've been living under a rock, you probably haven't heard about this case, but if you haven't, then we'll let you know. What's her name? Hannah Gutierrez. She was the armorer. That is the person responsible for safekeeping and maintaining the safety and proper safety use of any firearm on the set of movies, productions. They hire an armorer to come in. And usually, armorers are, you know, former law enforcement, former military. They have all the safety procedures. They instruct the actors on safe use of the weapons. The protocol, very, very strict rules on that. Like, you know, they do the rehearsal, they do everything, and when the time comes for the weapon, the armorer will go up to the actor who is in place on set, show them the weapon, show them that it's not loaded, hand the weapon to the actor. Actor uses it for what they need, and then as soon as the director calls cut, everybody's supposed to freeze, and the first thing that happens is the armorer and any assistants go and collect the weapons at the conclusion of the rehearsal, the scene, the filming, what have you. And Hannah Gutierrez, it was the armorer on the set of the film Rust that was filming in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and she I don't know if she had a law enforcement background, but her father was an armorer, so she'd grown up in this environment. And, well, tragically, a couple years ago, while a scene was being rehearsed, Alec Baldwin was holding a pistol. The pistol discharged, and both the cinematographer and the director were both hit by shrapnel from the weapon. The cinematographer tragically died, and Hannah Gutierrez had her trial this last week where she was charged with a couple of things. She was charged with, the big one was wrongful death, involuntary manslaughter.
Right.
Yeah. Come on, Todd, get the terminology down.
One civil.
Yes. So, yes. Well, and that civil one will be coming, you know, if they haven't resolved it already. But yes, in the criminal context, it is involuntary manslaughter. And she was also charged with evidence tampering. And the jury deliberated after hearing all of the evidence presented by the prosecution. And she was found guilty this last week by the jury of involuntary manslaughter, acquitted of the evidence tampering. The evidence tampering had to do with there was an allegation, a lot of cocaine use on set, and that she had taken some cocaine that she had found. She was charged with, you know, giving it to somebody else to hide, which would be tampering with evidence, trying to hide the evidence. She was acquitted on that charge, but she was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Now, this raises some interesting questions about the impact of this conviction, what impact this conviction will have on the Alec Baldwin trial on the same charge of involuntary manslaughter that has yet to occur.
And you and I are of different opinions on this.
Yes, we are, in terms of, you know, what can be used. There is the first question is going to be, in Alec Baldwin's case. Now, remember, the evidence to support the charges against the two separate defendants is they're different. They're different in the sense that Hannah Gutierrez, the manner in which she went about her job and her responsibility as the armorer, what she allowed on set or off set, you know, that is not necessarily big evidence against Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin is, dude, you held a gun that had a live round. The argument is going to be that you didn't exercise the safety procedures that you as an individual, even as an actor, are supposed to exercise independent of whether there's an armorer and whether or not you, Alec Baldwin, are guilty of involuntary manslaughter because of the way you acted, what you did after the gun came into your possession to rehearse this scene, whereas Gutierrez was more about just the overall, how she was doing her job and what she allowed to her the safety procedures, protocols, and stuff like that. But the first question is the jury in Baldwin's trial going to even know from an evidentiary standpoint? Like any potential jurors probably watched the news. They know she was convicted. And if they end up becoming a juror in Alec Baldwin's trial, maybe they know. But will they hear evidence of that during the trial of Alec Baldwin? That's going to be an interesting question. What do you think, Denise?
I think they will. I think that the defense is going to bring it up, and I think if the prosecution tries to do a motion in limine, the court can't grant that. That means they can't keep that evidence out because it could exonerate Baldwin.
Yes.
That's the reality of it. But I think if the facts play out like they did in the armorer's case, I feel like there is some gross negligence on the part of Alec Baldwin.
In what regard? You have a specific regard. There was something that Alec Baldwin insisted on that is big for you. And what is that?
Right. He insisted on having real guns. Real guns. And practicing with them and doing all that type of stuff because of the feel of them, because of the look of them, because he was executive director, because, you know, our executive producer and director, and he was trying to get the realism of this. But it was a little dangerous. And the question is, you know, how did the live bullet get on set? Now, that was probably the armorer's fault,
mm-hmm,
because she's the one in charge with making sure that doesn't happen. But it, when Alec picked up the gun or was handed the gun and did not check the gun, did not check the bullets in the gun, and pointed it directly at the cinematographer, I mean, I can't say that that's not gross negligence. I think that is. And so I feel like, and plus, as a director, he was insisting on a realism that could have helped create the problem, which was having a live gun. And so I just, I feel like, you know, he's an A-lister. I get it. I feel like that the jury is going to be maybe enamored with him. And especially if he testifies, which I'm thinking he probably shouldn't. But I don't know. I think he might have some problems here.
And here's my take on it. And strictly speaking, so for involuntary manslaughter, you got to show that somebody committed an act and they did it in a negligent or grossly negligent manner. But the key here is that when looking at the gross negligence of the matter, the jury's going to have to make a determination about whether or not when the person did what they did, they knew or reasonably should have known that it was likely that somebody would be hurt or killed as a result of that action. Now, insisting as an executive producer that a real gun be on set for realism, I don't know that makes it, because there are a lot of productions that use real weapons. That's why there's a whole industry of what we call armorers, because it's common to use real weapons, and so you have an armorer to make sure that is done in a safe manner. So the fact that he insisted on having a real weapon there is, that happens everywhere, and that's why we hire armorers to make sure that those real weapons can be on set in a safe manner. And our armorer was just convicted of manslaughter because of the negligent manner in which she went about doing our job. How can you hold that against me, Alec Baldwin, because for relying on somebody to do their job? I didn't think I was being given a gun that had a live round in it. So I get that argument. I think the thing that cuts against that is, as executive producer, I think Alec Baldwin would have known that prior to this, there were at least two instances where live rounds were accidentally discharged on a set where there should have been no live rounds. So you knew it was an issue.
Yeah,
it happened
on this particular set.
Yes, because it happened two times before.
Yes.
And that's going to cut against him.
And the fact that they were also shooting live guns and practicing with them after hours.
In my opinion, it's just my opinion, I don't believe there's evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to convict Alec Baldwin of this crime. But note that I said that, in my opinion, there is not evidence for beyond reasonable doubt. But when we come back after the top of the hour, we're going to talk about what it means to convict somebody beyond a reasonable doubt and why that could be problematic for Alec Baldwin. Don't go away. You're listening to Radio Law Talk.
You have been listening to RadioLawTalk.com, a copyrighted presentation of Radio Law Talk Incorporated.